Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Welcome to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. You've got me, May May.
And me, Denise.
And me, Martin.
Love that tune. Well, good morning, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, we are into the afternoon now.
I just need to kick the show off with something. Just bear with me.
Oh, you're straight in there.
Straight in.
Look at that.
Wow.
The ding of morning.
May, Millie Chambers. Taken the show.
She was so excited to get the bell.
She was watching.
Came in, where's the bell? There we go. So who are we dinging for today then?
You're running the show.
Well,
you tell us.
Orange Juice himself, OJ.
OJ.
R.I.P. OJ.
Yes.
Now I've got to say, I only know OJ for the conspiracy theory that he is Khloe Kardashian's real dad.
What?
Yeah.
Well, the Kardashian was involved with the legal side,
exactly,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just going to go back a bit.
Yeah.
Let's go back a bit.
To some film-based stuff. That'd be an idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult for people to, perhaps younger people now, to appreciate he was so famous and then infamous. Mm. I personally struggle to say the words rest in peace when no justice, no peace, because, you know, Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman never got justice for what happened to them. But putting him in the context of who he was and what he did before then and why everyone knew him.
Yes. At the end of the day, he was able to afford to employ the best lawyers in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry if I sound cynical about that. But
you, cynical?
Yeah. But just as a little bit more, but just going back a few more.
Going back a bit further.
He was one of the most famous NFL players. Mm-hmm. He'd been a star. I can't remember what team he played for.
Oh,
I'm not good at this.
This isn't a sports show.
No. it's not a sports show. Yeah,
it was a film show, and there was a very good documentary about it. Watch it if you want to know. Yeah.
Once his sporting career ended, he, like a number of other black athletes, like Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, made their way into movies. Mm-hmm. I guess they were such big figures in popular culture. And he was in a number of big movies. Tower and Inferno was on at Christmas. I've never sat and watched it, but but he was in it. But it's quite strange because he disappears for most of the film. They go and look for a cat, doesn't he? And then turns up at the end. What's all this about? But I've got to give a shout out here to Shelley, because I know she'll be sitting at home.
Shouting
that I've got to mention The Klansman.
There you go.
OJ's, the first film he was in that was actually released. And The Klansman, well, we could do an entire show on The Klansman.
Yeah. And you will do an entire show.
I think I'm going to.
I got through an hour, well, nearly three quarters of an hour of it on YouTube. But then these, Shelley and Martin were like, yeah, you need to see the uncensored version, because that's bad, but... But we could go worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a film with Richard Burton, Lee Marvin, all about racial tensions in the Deep South, made in 1975.
It's directed by Terence Young, who did all those Bond films.
Terence Young was a hack. Have you ever sat through a Terence Young...
I've only seen the Bond films
of his. Like, his films are like... Ray Charles has photographed them, and you know, Stevie Wonder has edited them. You know, that's what his films look like.
Brilliant.
Totally overrated hack. Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting three quarters of an hour. Mm-hmm. And then my other half came in and went, what are you watching?
Nothing. Nothing.
Let me see you. Gonna make some tea.
So apparently Burton was paralytic drunk for the entire shoot. He nearly died shooting one scene just because he fell over and he was so drunk.
Was that being tied to a tree?
I think for the climactic gunfight between him, Lee Marvin, and the Ku Klux Klan, he was tied to a tree for most of it.
It was so sad looking at him in that film, because that's 1974, and I went to see The Motive in the Queue the other week, which was the play about the 1964 play of Hamlet, directed by John Gielgud, that was in Broadway. And I went to watch that on YouTube after, and he just looks so ravaged 10 years later. Mm. So sad.
Well, sorry, but going back to OJ. Poor OJ. OJ was the figure of a radical black protest in here, and he goes around shooting Ku Klux Klan members, and it's a truly awful film. As I said to you yesterday, Denise, something to offend everyone. And okay, OJ's gone.
Someone else has gone as well. Can I ding it again?
Yeah, please. This is a much more worthy ding.
That was a little soft ding then. There we go.
This is a sad ding.
A very sad, mournful ding.
Mm. Eleanor Coppola. And funny, we were just mentioning Francis Ford Coppola last week, because it was the anniversary of, well, he was 85, and it was the anniversary of his release of Conversation, which he released when he was 35, in between the two Godfathers 50 years ago. Yep. And then this sad news comes this week.
Yeah. So his wife was out in the Philippines with him while he was shooting Apocalypse Now for about a year. And I won't go into all the details about Apocalypse Now, but it was, you could say, well, that's the story of that is worth a movie in itself. And, well, she made that movie.
Yeah.
Hearts of Darkness, which showed the utter chaos in which that film was made. Harvey Keitel was sacked after 2 weeks. Martin Sheen had a heart attack. The Philippines army kept taking the helicopters away so they could bomb an uprising further in the island. Marlon Brando turned up big, fat, and nothing like what Coppola wanted. They were writing the script quite often on the day that it happened. And still, it is one of the most amazing films
ever made.
And Coppola's put out three versions of it. He's like Ridley Scott and Blade Runner. He can't leave it alone. But Eleanor Coppola's film was the first time you saw all this stuff that hadn't been in Apocalypse Now. Stuff you didn't really, weren't sure if it was the whole French plantation sequence. You see glimpses of that, and loads of that stuff ended up going into Redux, didn't it? And she wrote a book about it. And one thing I didn't realise when I was reading the obituary, she'd actually... she made two features. She directed two, and I must admit,
relatively recently as well.
I hadn't realised that she'd done that as well.
She, I saw, I can't remember where I saw it now, but I saw some writing that she'd done about her experience of being a creative woman of her generation and just expecting to be a housewife and not understanding why she wasn't fulfilled by. And she went to various psychiatrists to help her understand. And I'm just really glad that she. Finally
fantastic
got that creative.
She had the outlet for her talents, didn't she? Which still around that time was relatively rare for female scriptwriter, female filmmaker.
And so that's daughter, a sad obviously, one. Sophia.
And their son Roman has been a film director. Their first son Giancarlo died in a boat
in
accident.
When he was very young, I think, in his early 20s. Yeah,
in a boat driven by Ryan O'Neill's son. It's very gossipy, this is
becoming. It is a little bit.
And Ryan O'Neill's son was found to have been negligent in he was driving the boat.
Gosh.
In fact, researching a lot of this stuff this week, it was like a Pandora's box. There was all this stuff that kept coming out for everything. So, I suppose it's touch and go whether or not Coppola will turn up for the Cannes Film Festival where he's going to be premiering Megalopolis.
More of that next week.
We shall cover Cannes in much more detail. Okay, so we're going to bring back one of our features, which is what, May from
Trailer Trash.
Trailer Trash.
Lots of new trailers this week that we have actually loved. So one that I thought I just cannot wait for is Maxine with a triple X.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love a bit of Mia Goth. I love Pearl. Cannot wait for this. Martin, you share my excitement for it.
X and Pearl, I think, have been two of the best horror movies in the past 5-6 years.
I loved Pearl. I realised who you're talking about.
Ty West bringing back horror.
Well, this is this one's set in the 80s.
Yes.
And
how 80s is it, Martin?
It looks it.
It's so 80s.
It looks it. You want to tell us about the star of it, May, as you seem to have had a memory blank as to when you first saw her, didn't you?
I still have no recollection of this. But apparently Martin screened something. What even was it?
The Survivalist.
I've no recollection.
But you went and watched
Donnie
Barber. Yes, but you can't remember why you watched Donnie Barber.
I just remember you telling me to watch Donnie Barber.
Well, not
I
you,
it.
A classroom.
A class,
just, you were the only one that went to see it. Thanks for that.
And then I was invited onto the show.
There was always one every year, isn't there?
but
I do love Mia Goth.
Mia Goth was in that.
Yeah.
You need to go and revisit that.
I think I must, yeah.
Because you'll probably have a NAMM flashback when you're like, oh, God, he was right. But then I was always right.
You're always right, Martin, always right. Exactly. But we're really looking forward to Maxine.
Yes.
Lots of, like, intertextual references within that trailer as well.
Including Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah. We love Kevin Bacon.
We love Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
But there's a great short teaser trailer, isn't there?
Yes.
Of just this helicopter shot whilst Obsession is blasting out.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to... And that's a great song.
Yeah.
It's just a helicopter flying over the Hollywood sign, which has now been transformed into Maxine.
Love it. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. That teaser trailer is fantastic.
That's what a trailer should do.
Exactly. You have been teased effectively.
I have been teased.
Moving rather briskly along, then. What else do we have?
We've also got the trailer for Joker 2.
Folie à deux.
Now, lots of people are saying that cinema is back just from this trailer, because in this trailer there is a sequence where Lady Gaga draws
a lipstick. I
don't
know people pronounce her name correctly. Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga, obviously.
Yeah.
She draws a lipstick smile on a perspex screen. And Joaquin Phoenix just lines himself up with this smile, and he smiles.
I said that sent a shiver down my spine when I saw
it. Cinema is back.
XFKA Twitter went crazy
for
that.
Yeah. So we are very much looking forward to that. And I love Lady Gaga as an actor. I think she is fantastic.
Who?
Lady Gaga. Oh,
sorry.
My apologies. Sorry. I think that she is sensational. I cannot wait for this film.
And the other surprise in the trailer was...
Oh,
where we go, that blank look. You don't follow
who? This is the icon of radio. Not Alan Partridge.
Oh!
Steve Coogan turns up in the trailer, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And I look forward to seeing if he is Partridge.
Yeah. That would be great. That would be intertextuality gone mad,
isn't
it?
Precisely. I think he must be.
He looks as though he's dancing on the Gary Glitter steps again, doesn't he?
Yeah, with Gar, sorry. So, yeah, very much looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that. I loved the first film, actually. I know that, obviously, you know, incel culture and things like that, but I loved it.
Okay.
Loved it.
But talking of dancing, more dancing in a trailer.
Dancing in a empty car park. Mm. Thank you, Emma Stone, for sharing that with us. So we've
I've
got
done
Kinds
that a lot
of
in
Kindness.
My life.
Yeah. Wearing a suit and sandals as well,
wearing
Martin.
Wearing suit and sandals. I just turn up the stereo loud from the car, you know. I put a cassette in and that's it. There you go.
Well, we're actually going to come on to talking about an actor who is in this film later on, I believe. But we've got our Jesse in Kinds of Kindness as well. Is he going to be bad Jesse,
though? Bad Jesse or good Jesse?
That's the question. Mm-hmm. But Willem Dafoe is also in this, looking very fetching in a pink windbreaker. I can't wait.
Is he going to be like Barbie Peru?
So that's Kinds of Kindness, the new Yorgos Lanthimos flick.
You'll be there for that then, won't you, Denise?
Oh, I mean,
that's you are...
Me to a T.
You to a T.
One of your favourite filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And Emma Stone's in it?
Yeah, Emma Stone is in it. I think she must be Lanthimos' muse.
Muse.
Precisely.
Yes, now he's finished with Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew it wouldn't be long.
Are we going to weasel the story in?
I'm just saying, I'm going to finish up this part because there was a story in the news which worried me intensely. was
a state of panic.
Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch were going to star in a remake of The War of the Roses.
Yeah.
All I can say about that is that I would pay good money not to go and see that. Mm-hmm. But it was bugging me, this story. And I started looking back. I couldn't find any more mentions of it, and it came out on the 1st of April. Mm,
there we go.
So I'm hoping...
Yeah.
It's a mad April.
Yeah. But at the same time...
I'm
getting a bit paranoid because that means that the national press are putting out stories that they know are going to annoy me.
It's a conspiracy against
me. You know, I'm just saying that's out there.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for it.
But, you know, it's because so many people listen to this show and they know that you hate both of those actors.
I've never mentioned Benedict Cumberbatch before. No.
But you are
And I've got to stop the Olivia
Colman
stuff because people will get excited. And, you know, people get really...
She's a national treasure, Martin.
They get really worked up. You play anything against her.
You loved The Favourite, though, didn't you?
It was all right. But when she was on... she was in The Lobster as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I love The Lobster.
That one's not my favourite.
And The Lobster's a great film.
That one's not my favourite.
Oh, I love it.
Does he do it at the end?
Well...
I like to leave a little thing. What did you mean by that? Right, we've got some music to get on with.
May,
this is all your responsibility, so I'm leaving all this to you.
First track of today's show is by one of our favourites, Nick Cave. And this is from the original soundtrack for Back to Black. I'll talk more about that after the track, actually. But this first song that we are going to play is called A Song for Amy by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. Thank you.
You say it's time for us to call it a day. Well, I will love you anyway. You know that I don't even care what they say. I'll still love you anyway, baby. Love gives everything. Just to take it away, I'd give you anything for you to stay. But if you go now, I won't stay in your way. But I will think of you every day. Cause I will love you anyway.
The mesmerically wonderful Nick Cave and Warren Ellis there with Song for Amy. Just wanted to mention that in pre-production at the moment is a film of Nick Cave's novel, Death of Bunny Munro, featuring Matt Smith. That's bound to be quite controversial. Mm. I have heard that those people being cast for it, because the story is of a sex addict travelling salesman who uses his travelling salesman status to have access to women, could be quite controversial. And I think actors that are being cast for it are being told, please make sure, casting agents are telling like agents, please make sure your actors understand the nature of this film. So that's going to be
salacious.
But the nature of the film that this is on the soundtrack for, maybe.
Right, let's get started. So Back to Black was released yesterday nationwide, the new Sam Taylor Johnson film. Now, I have my issues with Sam Taylor Johnson, and I said to Martin, you know, I'm going to go into this somewhat prejudiced. Martin said, no prejudice, please. But
I never have prejudice.
No.
This was somewhat of a stinker. Now, I gave it 2.5 stars on Letterboxd, and I'm thinking about it now, and I think it should be 2 stars. Maybe we should promote our Letterboxd at some point, Martin. Martin's Letterboxd is fantastic.
Can you give that ego a rest?
I'm talking about your Letterboxd right now. But this film, Back to Black, obviously about Amy Winehouse. Now, the problem that I had with it was that it was focused on her relationship with Blake entirely, and I thought that it reduced her to
her ex-husband.
Blake Fielder Civil, obviously the person who apparently got her hooked on Class A drugs. And actually in the film it shows her being against drugs to begin with, and then Blake kind of encouraging her to, you know, try it and things like that. But it was mainly focused on this relationship, and I thought that was really unfair because she isn't just this relationship. Obviously, that's what she's known for in the press and things like that. But yeah, it was disappointing to me. And like I say, it kind of made her out to be a victim and made it out that her whole life revolved around this relationship and revolved around wanting to get married and have children. And there were some really ham-fisted kind of elements in the film where she signed a receipt for a young girl who said, "Oh my gosh, you're Amy Winehouse, can I have your autograph?" And then Amy turned around and said, "I wish I was your mum." And it was just a bit,
what?
Yucky.
That, like, sounds really disappointing.
It was.
I thought the director had said she wanted to focus on her music.
Yeah. And there was like a great deal of the kind of music in it. And the actor who played Amy actually did get her voice, hands down. But then that kind of made me think, why did she have to reproduce that voice? Couldn't they have just used the original sounds and had her lip sync possibly? But anyway, so I thought that it did kind of reduce her life to this relationship, and it kind of suggested that she died of heartbreak over not having children, which obviously wasn't the case, because, you know, later on in life she was engaged to a close personal friend of Martin's. Reg Travis.
I met him twice.
You were on the red carpet, were you not?
I went to the premiere of one of his films, Antisocial.
There we go.
Which starred Meghan Markle. Oh. But he came to the university one day and he did a talk for students about making, well, low budget independent films.
Yeah.
I mean, he seemed a very, very nice guy.
Yeah.
And obviously, I didn't say, well, you know, I didn't raise anything about him having been with Amy Winehouse or anything. But, well, he seemed a very level-headed guy, that's all I can say.
Yeah. And
but,
she was with him at the end of her life, and she was sober at the end of her life as well, and that's what killed her, was alcohol poisoning, not a drug overdose like some people may think or assume. But yeah, so he wasn't mentioned at all. It was all about Blake, and I thought that that was really unfair, to be honest. And, you know, the film was really soppy at times. Like I say, you know, turning around saying, "I wish I was your mum." And, you know, there was this thing about a pet bird. And if you watch it, you'll understand. But it was just, you know, it was really quite a sanitised version of her life. It was really soppy. And I do need to remember that, you know, the film is supposed to be entertainment. And I think I expected a lot more. But a little bit of context. Mr. Winehouse, Mitch Winehouse, Amy's dad, was heavily involved in the film making, and he came across quite well in the film, which isn't the case in real life. And if you've watched the documentary Amy from a few years ago, you will know that he isn't this kind of like figure who was a beacon of hope in her life. He was actually an enabler, and he exploited her throughout her life as well. And he was enraged at the documentary when he watched it, but was really happy with how this film turned out, so that should tell you a little bit about that.
And the documentary is well worth catching up on. You get
it's a realistic view, and it's, you know, footage from her friends and things like that. So it's a real kind of collage of her life. But yeah, I just thought that Sam Taylor Johnson did not do a good job here. There wasn't any kind of visual moments where I thought, wow. It was very basic, and I'm going to come on to the lighting because it really angered me. I've even drawn a little angry face next to lighting on my nose.
She has.
See? Because, and I was saying earlier, it looked like an advert. I mean, I don't know what it would be advertising, but by that I mean it was just so brightly lit throughout the whole thing. There was no kind of like elements of dark and light, and they're just visually, it was so unappealing. So I mean, I could go on for quite a lot longer. I've got page of notes here. But I thought the casting was really quite good, actually. The performances were good.
I like Jack O'Donnell normally.
He was fantastic in it. You know, he really had that appeal.
He is really good.
Yeah.
And he can play sort of very ambivalent characters really well.
Yeah, I saw the actor playing Amy as well in a TV series called Industry, and I thought she was really good.
Yeah, she was. So I thought the casting was brilliant. And obviously we've got National Treasures playing Mr. and Mrs. Winehouse as well.
Eddie and Leslie.
Yeah, precisely. But I thought, do you know what? If you're a fan of Amy Winehouse, don't go and watch it. And if you aren't a fan of Amy Winehouse,
The switchboard's lighting up.
You know, it's funny. I've only seen the trailer for this a few times. I haven't seen the film yet. But it's funny how much of my brain it's taken up this week thinking about it.
Yeah.
And just, I am going to go and see it, even though I'll be thinking about May May the whole time. But it's difficult to know why we're reacting the way that we are before we've even seen it, some people. So a lot of fans going, how dare you, don't even touch it.
Well, but it was screened in Camden to a standing ovation. But that's more about, I mean, you know, the Camden kind of like portrayal, like early, mid-2000s. It did seem like, you know, a very fun, lively place. What was it that you mentioned earlier? Camden? I can't even remember now. But the people of Camden loved the film.
I just find it interesting though that is it too soon? Is it too cliched? Because or have we got a sense of guilt over our part in, you know, the media frenzy that didn't really help?
I mean, there's been a plethora of movie biopics in the past.
And I'm sick of it.
None of them will be very... You know, what they've done... well, they did Whitney last year, didn't they? Bob Marley film looked terrible.
I did go see it.
And Sam Taylor-Johnson does do these biopics. She did Nowhere Boy years
Lennon,
ago.
Yeah.
And she has made a documentary in the past as well. But I just thought... You know, I'm really quite protective over people exploiting Amy Winehouse because she was exploited so much throughout her life by the people that she trusted. And I would just say that this made entertainment out of her.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
That could be so easy to do, isn't it?
But there were moments of the film where I, you know, felt emotional, I felt tense. And that, you know, you just need to remember that this film is pure entertainment. That's all it is. It's just a Hollywood entertainment.
Do you know they're gonna cut that and just put May May says pure entertainment?
Yeah. And pull out the poster. Because that's what they do, you know? Yeah. I mean, we could probably count down the days now until there's going to be a Pete Doherty biopic.
Oh, stop
Can you imagine
it.
That?
Stop it.
Can you imagine that? But they will do.
I feel sick to my stomach. And I will go and watch it and I think I'll slate it.
Oh, yeah. Well.
There we go. So, overall, slate from me, which is a shame because I do enjoy Amy Winehouse. Her songs, I think, are absolutely wonderful. And her life was dedicated to music, not to this relationship with Blake Fielder Civil. So that's me done. Thank you for listening to me rant. For 10 minutes, I think.
Okay, if you want to go into the green room, have a lie down for a few minutes.
I need to spray some water in my face, I think.
Well, I think that film got off quite lightly, don't you, Denise? What she was effing and blinding about before we came into the studio.
I have censored myself there.
We did make sure she only had one coffee.
Yeah.
Before,
yeah. Very briefly, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the new drama series is taking Netflix by storm. Ripley, which is the latest incarnation of fiendishly clever criminal and murderer Tom Ripley, this time played by Andrew Scott. It's based on the Patricia Highsmith novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley, which has been filmed before with Anthony Minghella's The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Fantastic,
with
Matt
Damon. Tom Ripley. And back in the late 50s in Plein Soleil, where Alain Delon played Ripley. And Ripley has also been played by John Malkovich in Ripley's Game. And how I got into the Ripley books way back in the late 70s, Dennis Hopper played him in The American Friend. And I was really taken with the film. I read the books. But when I was reading the books, I always imagined Dennis Hopper in his cowboy hat being Tom Ripley. He's a character which can be quite difficult to tackle because people say, well, what does he do? He says, well, you know, he's a borderline criminal.
And the books are much more complicated.
Oh, yeah.
Much more complicated.
Yeah. And, you know, he kills a few people through the course of the books. And someone says, oh, is he like Dexter then? No, he's not. He's a very, very complicated character. And you sometimes sympathise with him.
Entirely, yeah.
And sometimes you're also a bit appalled at what he does. His cold-bloodedness is quite alarming. And Andrew Scott is playing him. It's gorgeously shot. 8-part Netflix
Black
series.
Black and white.
I was getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
Do you want to take over?
No, I just think about when you screened Logan Noir to us. What do you think about black and white? Do you think it takes away from?
Oh, I only watch films if they're in colour. I think black and white, well, most films ever made have been shot in black and white.
True.
And I think when it's done well, especially nowadays, it looks better than most. Logan Noir, which is the Logan film, but the black and white version, it looks $1 million.
Yeah.
It absolutely looks brilliant. And this looks amazing. The the camera compositions, the architecture, everything looks terrific. So if you've got some time and you feel like something's going to challenge you a bit, give it a try.
Mm. I will. Andrew Scott, anytime.
Yeah. I also think there's a, at the end of it, and I'm not going to say what, I do feel there's something of a narrative black hole in it, which was bugging me from about the middle of the series onwards, but I'm not going to say, but it's just something that needles me.
Yeah. Right, so...
more music.
Next track then is, again, this is an Amy Winehouse original, but it is from the soundtrack of Back to Black. This is What Is It About Men?
Understand, once he was a family man, so surely I would never, ever go through it firsthand. Emulate, or the shit my mother hate, I can help but demonstrate my Freudian fate. My alibi, Bodegan, your guy, history repeats itself. Covering my fears, our behavioral patterns that stick over the years. Cause it's bricked up in my head, it's shoved under my bed, and I question myself again. What is it about me? Now my destructive side.
Listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital, and you can always listen online in a catch-up mode. Okay, we've got a couple more films to give you reviews on. First off, Matteo Garrone's Yo Capitano is currently still about in a couple of cinemas in Sheffield. It's a very contemporary story about two young Senegalese teenagers who decide to make a perilous trip from their home country to Europe to try and take advantage of what they see as being the riches and the opportunities awaiting them if they can get across the Mediterranean. It's a bit of a tough watch. There's some quite horrifying, alarming scenes within it. And the picture it gives of this like global industry of people coming from, in this case, Africa, over to get to Europe, it's, well, some of it's absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah, there's a lot of criminal gangs going into the void of...
And it's like you really get the sense of how this is completely an international, global racket that's going on.
And these kids, they're only 16, aren't they? You know, I think Seydou Sarr plays Seydou, and there's a Mustapha Fall who plays Musa. They're just such... they're so believable in it because they are... I was blown away by this film, and the more, it's one that when I watched it, I thought about it a lot afterwards. Scenes come back to me. Yeah,
it's one of those. But when you, I don't know, when I hear, you know, certain politicians going on about sending people to Rwanda is going to break the model of
or
how
stopping the boats.
You see how that it's practically impossible to do. You really get this sense of how, like, every step of the way, it's a different set of gangsters exploiting these people.
And they don't have any... Because as an audience, as a watcher, you know the danger that's coming to them. Yeah. But they think they're setting off an adventure. And there's this one scene where they're being driven across in a sort of Jeep-type truck across the desert by the first gang that is offered to help them. And someone falls off the back of the truck and the truck just keeps going. And there's a look in Seydou's eye of, wait a minute, what are we doing? What's going on here?
I wasn't expecting for it to be like this.
And they get that sense of the danger that they're actually in. And then they have no idea how bad it's going to get.
And and it's got a very open ending, let's say. And I don't want to say too much about that, but it's an ending that is ripe for a good discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the film, in some ways, it tries not to make too much of a case pro or for, but it's very subtle. As we were saying, when they're in Senegal, they don't seem to be in abject poverty, but
they just have a dream, and why shouldn't they have a dream?
But they're watching this on smartphones, but God knows how old they are. And the thing that then seeps into you is they're all wearing old football kits. You know, the stuff that would probably be in landfill here.
But with stuff on it like UNICEF and all really positive things about, you know, how good the world is and how caring we are.
It makes a very sort of subtle but strong point about how all of this, every part of this is compromised, how we look upon this in the West. It's a great movie,
but
though,
there
I
are
think.
Moments of hope and joy in it as well. Yeah. There's a lovely relationship with a chap called Martin along the way, who sort of mentors one of them.
That was beautiful, those short scenes. And but we be warned, some of it can be quite horrific as well. More mayhem then.
Oh. So yesterday, I made time in my trip over the wrong side of the Pennines to see the Underworld, which is, I'm a little bit tired today because I'm a little bit old for this stuff. I went to see Civil War on IMAX.
Me too. Not with you.
No, Martin didn't go out clubbing after. No. I did. Alex Garland, writer and director, who has said he's not going to be directing anymore after this, but we'll see. Civil War. It is about Civil War in America. It's basically the story of a photojournalist called Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst. She is war-weary, but this is happening in her own country now. She and a reporter, Wagner Moura, playing Joel, and a young... she says she's 23, but an aspiring photojournalist called Jessie, played by Kaylee Spaney, set off on a mission to interview the president, basically, who is about to fall, it looks like.
Yeah.
And they want to get there through a circuitous route to try and interview him before he falls.
The film's not 100% clear in mapping out exactly how the country is split, apart from California and Texas have become this
an unlikely alliance of Western forces against the president. There's some hints that he's been bombing. Well, there's explicit he has been bombing his own country, but there's no talk of why or what's.
And I think that worked myself. Absolutely, some reviews saying, well, we didn't get the digger. You're in the middle of a civil war.
You don't get the detail,
You don't know what's happening. You don't know that the next town you hit, who might control it. And I, for me, that not knowing really, really worked.
I think the pace of this film was fabulous.
Well, it's like a road movie, isn't it, in effect? Yeah.
And the performances were just on point with everybody, but particularly Kirsten Dunst. She is... It's like she's dead behind the eyes.
Yeah.
And physically, her whole physicality is weary. And but then you'll see her at times jump into the mode of I'm a photographer. This is what I do. I just see it. I say definitely see it.
Any questions? In IMAX, and it's got to say bad.
Jesse is bad.
And it was like that. I don't want to spoil it by saying what scene. You might have seen the trailer and seen,
seen what Jesse.
But it's a very short moment with him in it, and apparently, according to an interview with Kirsten, because he is her real life husband, he was only on set looking after their kids. And something happened with the actor that was playing the part, and rather than reshoot it another time, she said to Alex, "Why don't we, Alex Garland? Why don't? Well, Jesse's here." And I'm like, "Can you imagine him recommending your husband for that scene? He is bad Jesse in this scene." Yeah.
As I said, to you earlier, I hope he didn't go home and he was still in character when he got into play with the kids that
night.
It's
an incredibly tense scene, and don't watch the trailer because you might. Some of that tension might be worked out by the trailer. Yeah. We need to talk about trailers one day and how much they give away.
Yes, yeah.
You've convinced me to go and see it in IMAX, I have to say.
I'm giving it a complete and utter rate.
Yeah, solid rate from me too.
It's amazing.
Mm. Well, on
Music,
that note,
Maestro.
Next track is a song again from the Back to Black soundtrack, and this was a song that personally inspired Amy Winehouse greatly, and this is All of Me by Billie Holiday.
All of me, can't you see? I'm no good without you. Take my lips, I want to lose them. Take my arms, I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. How can I go on, dear, without you? You took the part that once was my heart, so why not? Without you, Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. How can I go on, dear, without you? You took the best, so why not take the rest?
You're listening to The Film Show with May Martin and Denise this week on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital, or listen again online on the Sheffield Live website. Now that was Billie Holiday with All of Me, so a 1940s definitive version really of a 1930s American standard, All of Me, and an inspirational song for Amy Winehouse,
yes,
who is our this month's musical theme. So we're going to move on and have a look at new releases now. There's not a lot of new releases. It's that post-Oscars kind of...
Not for the week coming up, there's not a lot, is there?
But still out and worth your attention, although I haven't seen them yet, but I can't wait. Well, I have had to wait, busy week, but we'll get into that. Teacher's Lounge, still showing. It looks intriguing.
German film about something about a primary
teacher,
school.
She's trying to catch a child in the act of stealing, and she starts recording, and then all sorts of things come out of that.
Sounds a bit Michael Haneke almost. Yeah.
And then I mentioned it last week as well. Close Your Eyes, Victor. No, let me get the name. Erice.
Erice or Erice, I don't know, but it's, it can't be too far off from that.
So he's not made a film for about 30 plus years. And I didn't see the last one. I only know the classic.
Spirit of the Beehive, isn't it? Yeah. Well, from 1973.
73, yeah.
And still regarded as one of the greatest films ever made, yeah.
And I've heard of really great things about Close Your Eyes as well.
Yeah.
So that is still on release. A new release out on Friday, which looks very exciting for me. Book of Clarence. So this is James Samuel. It stars Lakeith Stanfield, who also featured in his Netflix The Harder They Fall, which was the sort of, how do you describe Harder
Black
They
Western.
Fall? Black Western, extremely gory, get in all the cliches.
Everything that happens in a Western in this Western.
I think I actually saw that in the cinema. I think I saw it, and it had a very limited cinema release because it was a Netflix one.
I saw it on Netflix. I just get tired of these films where, as I say, they have to chuck everything in. You know, Westerns are a fairly spare sort of genre, you know?
Yeah, not in 2020s. But Lakeith Stanfield.
I would, actually, I should point you to a great Western, which was only made 2 or 3 years ago by Tim Blake Nelson, called Old Henry, which has a cast of for about a dozen people. And it's one of the best Westerns I've seen in years.
This is such a learning experience.
I'm adding this to my list.
She's got a long list.
Tim Blake Nelson as an ordinary old farmer. Bunch of bank robbers turn up at his ranch. Mayhem ensues.
That looks bleak.
Oh, it is. It is. It is very, very bleak.
Well, I like the... So the Book of Clarence looks like Lakeith Stanfield, who also was so wonderful in Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah.
Yeah. He
plays a kind of contemporary of Jesus, who sees Jesus's rise to popularity and thinks, I'm going to have a bit of that myself.
Life of Brian. It
looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's on release on Friday.
Ooh, I'll catch that. Mm-hmm.
And then what have we got? Well, we've got like...
There's a couple of one-off screenings. Yeah. Or a couple of
two
screenings.
Or three, yeah. For fans of RoboCop...
Hello.
You might want to get to the light. It's showing. It's only got three, I think, this week. One might have already happened, but there's another two to go.
It says it's the director's cut, but the director's cut only has about 10 seconds more than the other cut.
It's the director's cut.
I think there's a few more. There's a few more squibs in a couple of the scenes.
It's funny. I went to see Cinema Paradiso last weekend, And that's a film you don't want to see the director's cut because that's got an extra hour on it. Yeah. It? And you're like, oh, I don't need that story.
That's like a and it kind of spoils, cut, that is.
Yeah, it kind of spoils some of the
I would
things
say,
that you don't know.
Look at Apocalypse Now. Yeah. Redux was too long.
Yeah.
And reduce the Redux, please.
Yeah. The final cut was still, I don't know if I need it. I mean, I still like the original myself. Yeah.
We've also got the 30th anniversary screening of Speed at the Light as well.
Get out! 30 years old!
30 years old, Martin.
Does that make you feel old or young, Martin?
Old.
I'm very too old for this.
And we've also got, if you're in Nottingham as well, Broadway are showing a marathon of the Lord of the Rings extended edition films on Bank Holiday at the end of May.
Do you know, just the thought of that May makes my bladder go a bit.
It makes, well, I've never actually watched the films in their entirety. My dad loves them. I've watched bits of them. I'm not about Lord of the Rings, to be honest. But if you are, go to Broadway and watch the marathon. I assume it'll be from like 10 a.m. until 1 a.m. the next day.
If you are, I'd say get help.
I just remember the last one and just thinking,
I never made it.
I needed to leave for about the last hour.
Yeah.
And I remember with the ending of it just going, well, they could have done that at the beginning. Why have I just sat through that? Mm. Oh, my God.
I'm also, I'd just like to say, the Cineworld in Sheffield has got an IMAX weekend next weekend.
Oh, I'm a really reconvert.
Loads of old
IMAX
films in IMAX. I haven't got the full listing here, so you'll have to go online. We can't do everything for you. And it's only £3 a ticket to go and see something in
bargain
IMAX.
Bargain.
Oh, well, after my experience with Civil War,
I'm there for IMAX. I'm there. Yeah.
You've been converted.
I have.
So is that it for this week?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Are we back next week?
We are back next week in full glory. And do you want to shout us out?
I'll shout us out.
Go on
in. You can listen to us online, on demand. Sheffield Live website, 93.2 FM if you fancy listening to it live. Our last track today to commemorate my rant is Back to Black by Amy Winehouse.
Thank
you for listening today.